Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I'm Linda Perlis.
And I'm Sandy Burt. From the time our children go off to a school program until they graduate from high school, parents take on a special responsibility. Neither the school nor we can do the job of educating and socializing our children alone. We need each other, not as adversaries, but as partners. Our guest today will help us explore how best to communicate with our children's school.
Joining us are Joan Bichot, who is a middle school guidance counselor and also a parent of two daughters, a ninth grader and a sixth grader. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here, too.
And Marge Diamond, director of admissions of an independent school, grades pre-kindergarten through 8, a former nursery school teacher and parent of two grown daughters. Glad to have you with us, Marge.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, too.
And Phyllis Jaworski, an experienced high school English teacher with a grown son who is also a teacher. Thanks for being here, Phyllis.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Let's start with you, Marge. How do parents benefit from communication with their child's school?
I think parents benefit in many different ways. The first is just being a part of a partnership, of being involved with people at school who know their children well and who can work with them toward common goals. But in a more specific way, I think that parents can learn a great deal from professionals who are working with their children about their child at that point, and learning how to focus in a helpful way on what the needs and issues might be at that age and that stage. I think they learn a lot about children in general, about what it's like to be a 4-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 12-year-old, and can put that in a perspective of understanding growth and development and knowing what to expect now and later. Mm-hmm. I think that they have a rich opportunity to share themselves, to share what they think, what they feel, some of their interests and strengths, and become an active part of the school community. And I think they also derive a lot from having an opportunity to connect with other parents through the school community, of having a real network of people who can share their concerns and share their ups and downs and can be there for them in all kinds of ways.
It's interesting. It's sort of like a little village in a way.
Yeah, it's very much a community, and I think that, especially in these days when things are so fragmented, can be very important.
How can parents specifically contribute in a positive way to that school community?
I think there are lots of different ways. I think it depends some on the school. Our school is a school that truly values and encourages parent participation in many ways, ranging from spending time in the classroom to being a part of a board. But I think in all school situations, there's always a parent association of some sort that has committees and special events that are ongoing, and teachers are always eager in some way to have parents help in the class or on a trip they may be taking. And I think that parents can pick and choose what interests them, what's comfortable, what works into their time schedule, and find a way to be there.
I think Phyllis wanted to add something.
Yes, in the area of educational reform, a big area that has been developed recently is in site-based management. Montgomery County got into this, unfortunately, didn't do as much with it as might have been done. But I was in a school and involved in other schools who were involved in site-based management, and one of the neatest areas about it, one of the areas I enjoyed working in, was working with the parents. And we had parents involved in school curriculum, parents coming into the schools, making suggestions that I started teaching. How to write a college essay, for instance, at a parent's suggestion, because they saw, you know, another side of, you know, we were looking at academics, and here were parents trying to be very practical, and my children have to write, you know, these essays, so parents were involved that way. So this is an area that is sort of growing. Some parents might keep an eye open to an opportunity to be involved in their children's schools through site-based management programs.
Go ahead, Joan.
Well, in addition, I also work for Montgomery County Schools. We have clusters where the elementary, middle, and high schools are all part of one cluster, and they may focus on a particular topic or need of that cluster group. So parents can go from the elementary and participate on to middle and high school. And this particular year, they have, in our cluster, have focused on one area, and all three of the levels of schools are focusing on this, and when they have speakers, the parents of all levels will come together. So it's a kind of common interest, common goal that we all share across all grade levels.
Now, this is probably an age-related question in terms of children's ages, not yours or mine. How desirable is it for the parents to be physically present at times in the children's classrooms anyone can answer that. Marge, you want to start?
I can start from the littlest on up. You know, even in our school, which goes from a pre-K age through eighth grade, it changes dramatically from one age to another. Younger children often are very pleased to have their parents right there in a frequent sort of way, doing cooking projects, going on trips, being a visitor in class. Older children don't want their parents quite so close most of the time, but they still value parents coming. It's often more comfortable if it's more formal, if parents come and show slides of a trip they've taken or come and talk about their work, which may go with what they're studying in class, or come to the museum because they're doing a field trip in that sense. But it's still a way that parents demonstrate an interest and a concern and an active involvement with what children are doing, and children, I think, cherish that.
In high school, I think it's the biggest threat. I'm going to ask your parent to come in and observe you. However, field trips are sometimes the exception. You know, sometimes kids are pleased to have their parents along on a field trip, but not in the classroom at all.
Interesting little story in the middle school about one of my kids. I had a parent conference, and she was a seventh grader at the time, and she was sitting there, and her mother and myself, and she wouldn't give her mother any eye contact or any form of affection in any way. And when it was time to leave, her mother said and reached out to her, honey, and was about to give her a kiss, and she wouldn't. But instead, she turned to me and gave me a hug. And I thought that was pretty indicative. But in the middle school, parents do come into the building. They stay away from their kids. They work kind of behind the scenes on special projects, in the office, do all kinds of volunteer work. But actually going into the classroom, the kids would prefer that they not join. It's kind of like what you were saying about being a threat. They don't want them. And you always hear the story about going out to dinner with your kids, and I know personally my kids happen to walk next to me, but I know a lot of other kids, when they go out to dinner, the parents walk ahead or the kids walk ahead and they pretend like they associate with the parents.
Often we find that it works well if it's a group kind of situation. Our fifth graders have a Spanish fiesta where they prepare a dinner and share with the parents what's going on in their Spanish class, and the sixth graders do a science fair dinner kind of thing. And somehow if their friends are all doing it too, and if it's formalized, it's a way of sharing that isn't personally threatening so much.
Actually, we did have a wonderful program 2 years ago at our school where we had a psychiatrist come and speak to parents and kids together, and your ticket into the program was you had to bring your child with you. So it was a parent and child, and we had a therapist talk to the adults, and then we had, I think, a psychiatric social worker work with the kids. So the kids and the parents were separated during the evening program, and then we came back together, so it was kind of together but separate, and it worked well, and that was a time that it was okay to come with your parent to that evening function.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Changing the focus a little bit, Joan, what do you think the best approach would be where a parent's uncomfortable with something, for example, a particular teacher or an unpleasant issue? How's the best way for a parent to proceed?
In the middle school, the counselor is really the first person that a parent would get in touch with. They are the liaison between the school, the child, the parent. I mean, they act as the middle person to resolve and help to promote a more positive relationship. It's interesting when the kids go from elementary to middle school, they're so used to calling the principal because the counselor is either half-time or not really working in that fashion with the community. But in the middle school, the first step is usually the counselor. Now, oftentimes, if you feel comfortable with calling a teacher, a parent could call a teacher, but sometimes they don't know the teacher as well. Counselors are much more easily accessible. For instance, I get to school by 7 and I'm there till late, so it's easy to get a hold of me, or I'll return the call in the evening. And it's a partnership. What the counselor's purpose would be to bring the parent in. It's really important that the parent feels that they are being heard prior to the meeting and know what the issues are. And then the counselor could go to the teacher and talk with the teacher and find out their perception of how they see things. And then right from the beginning, to setting the stage and the purpose that we're here for the child's best interest, and our goal is to help, hope that this will be a successful relationship and educational experience for the child, so that we're all here on the common ground, we all agree. And then it would be important in person. I really do believe that being together and working this out, and you say this, that together this is a round table and we will work together, and everyone has a chance to be heard, and there's honesty and openness and respect. And I think the counselor can set that stage so that whatever the issue is, or whether it's an issue related to something in the school academically, curriculum-wise, or whether it had to do with a particular teacher, it can be resolved.
That's very clever to use a round table. That's a very good prop. Do either one of you want to jump in with other suggestions in terms of, is it different in terms of the ages? I know Joan was saying that the middle school is one approach, but with little kids, is it better to go to directly to the teacher, or is it still better to go to a liaison kind of person?
I think at younger ages, usually things do start with a teacher, and that's a person who in an ongoing way really knows that child best. But often other people are involved. At our school, there are teams of teachers, so it's not usually one particular teacher, although there is one contact teacher. Often in a conference situation, a number of teachers will be present, and sometimes an administrator will come. And if there's a special subjects teacher who's been especially attuned to that child, that person may come too, or if there's a tutor involved. So it very much is a group, and it's a situation where people are adding different pieces of the puzzle, trying to understand and trying to work things out together.
Okay, and with the high school?
I think also going directly to the teacher is usually the most effective. There are also support groups out there. There's an active Black parents group, for instance, in Montgomery County for parents who have concerns about curriculum and curriculum that is perhaps too white. And I think we have had that problem in Montgomery County. It takes so long to get books approved. I taught in a school that was 80% minority, and 99% of the books we were teaching were by white and usually male writers, but this Black parent group was very helpful in getting some of the new books, some of the new titles approved for use, and I know some parents went to that group with concerns, so there are groups out there.
Is there follow-up that parents should keep in mind, do you think, after they have some kind of a meeting or something's been brought up? Do you think parents should have like a battle plan or something that they should know to do?
Well, I think once you've met, you will talk about kind of what is the next step. And then I think it would be important for the counselor as a liaison to get back in touch with the parent and find out, are you pleased with what's going on? Certainly, I didn't mention this also, that it's important that if it's related to a child and a teacher, we will have the child be a part of it. It's at this age that they own what is going on with the concerns, and it is a partnership, and it isn't just the parent and the school, but it is the child is certainly a part of it, so it's very important for the child to be there. And notes are taken so that at the conclusion of the meeting, it is said, what is the follow-up? What are we going to do? And so at the end, the counselor will look back at the notes and say, now, here's what we said we were going to do. Is there anything else we want to do? And in the middle school, the counselor sees all of the kids every day. They're, you know, certainly in the lunchroom, and we have a time where it's called TTC, Time to Care, where it's a time where kids can come down and not miss an academic class or an arts class. So they have a chance to talk about some of the concerns that they may have at this age. So certainly follow-up would occur, and the counselor would be, I think, instrumental in making sure that every party felt that we were all doing our part and it was resolved.
Phyllis, when should a parent initiate a teacher conference?
Well, there are the typical red flag situations, obviously a poor grade on a report card, interim reports. It's a shame if a parent waits that long. The problem is obviously deep at that point, but those are important times, obviously, if problems aren't caught before that. Parents should be sensitive to their child's behaviors, change in behaviors. Parents usually, there are certainly clues if children are skipping school or very unhappy with school. If a student is really unhappy, has school phobia, lots of illnesses, quote, illnesses, unquote, something might be going on to make that child unhappy in that classroom or in any particular classroom or all the classrooms, perhaps with other students. So parents need to be sensitive. I had a student the year before last whose parents were so unaware of what she was about. She had been literally skipping school 3 or 4 days a week, but doing it legally because she had a story that she had cancer. The school was also at great fault because there was no communication between parents and school. Now, there was an added problem here. There was a language difference, too, where the parents weren't real comfortable in speaking English. But somehow, three
That's
and a half
amazing.
Years it took for the school to pick up what was going on. This child was faking having cancer so she could be out of school. That's an extreme
example. What was happening to her grades during that period of time?
Well, she was allowed to make it. She was a very bright student. She was in my advanced placement class.
Oh, my God.
And because she was given all this time to make up work and everyone was so concerned and felt so sorry for her, this poor child might be dying. She was doing fine. In fact, she was admitted to a good college. And I can't remember now which one. I think it was University of Pennsylvania.
I hope they have a liberal leave policy at this college.
They rescinded it when she didn't graduate with her class. We had, the red flags were going off for me like crazy. And finally, to make a long story short, pushed this, to the question and found out that the child had been lying for almost her entire high school career. But this is an extreme case. This doesn't happen very often. But I'm saying the parent ought to, there was something going on
missing
in that home that the parents were totally unaware that this child, who apparently was coming to school and then taking off every day, but had no idea that that child wasn't in school every day. There was a problem in terms of the teachers also.
Yeah.
There should have been more communication. But anyway, I'm just saying that parents ought to be very sensitive to the feelings of the child and the whereabouts of their
child. That's an interesting situation because often you think that one who's going to be skipping school all that time is not the excellent student. And she obviously was
That's
a
right.
bright girl.
Probably would have been caught if it had been a poor student, But there was the expectation, that, she wouldn't lie. She's this wonderful
and
kid.
And the parents thought, well, she's doing fine in school. They weren't initiating any communication. How should a parent prepare for a teacher conference?
Parents should be familiar with the work the student is doing in class. Work is returned. It always amazes me when parents are surprised that a student gets an interim progress report in a class or a poor grade, when they're shocked. And I say, this student has had papers returned, or if no papers have been returned, that means something else is going on.
They
haven't been turned in, exactly. So a parent should ask to see papers, get some idea of what goes on in the class. Perhaps, depending on the situation, the age of the child, should even visit the class first and should talk to the student about it. And if there are areas that the parent is uncomfortable with, like curriculum, perhaps go to an expert first and talk about what is going on in the class in terms of what is supposed to go on in the class.
Now, how would a normal parent find an expert to talk about a curriculum matter?
Depending on if it were English, for instance, there are people in the county that could be called. You could call, without directly bringing in the school and the teacher and getting the kid in the middle and all uncomfortable.
In most school systems, there would be, because this is all over the country
that's right.
But they could call the Board of Education and find out the head of the curriculum for math or for English or for something and then talk to that person.
And I'm certain that almost any system would have such a person who would be removed enough from that classroom that it wouldn't, bring in the personalities. It wouldn't be as threatening.
What kind of mindset would you want a parent to come in with for a productive meeting? What would you be hoping the parent is going to come in like?
Well, I'll start with the negative. I haven't appreciated parents coming in is with a chip, on the shoulder. Anger.
Adversarial.
Why is my child? Why are you reporting him for this? So I would hope that a parent would come in prepared to talk with the teacher and work things out. Like we're all said this, partners in this. Let's work out what is going on here. Where are the problems? Where are the positives? What is the best thing for the child? So the positive attitude is absolutely important to get anything done.
How do you keep on track during a conference? Do parents wander all over the place?
Sometimes, and sometimes teachers do too. By the way, the discipline problem. Because everything does get tied together. I guess in some cases, it might not always be the best thing to be on track. I mean, you do want,
that's a good point.
You have an agenda, you're going in there, you need to keep that in mind and perhaps jot down notes, areas that you want to cover so you can look over your questions to be sure you've covered them. But perhaps something else will come up that wasn't on your agenda, that wasn't on track. It's more relevant than anything that was. So I think you have to be open to getting off track also, to really, again, sitting down with the idea of, we're going to solve these problems or work out what's best for the student here.
Marge, how do you think parents can best educate themselves about the program and expectations for their child's grade?
I think that schools have lots of ways of making information available, and I think most parents are, in fact, quite interested and responsive. And I know that as an independent school, we have the luxury of more opportunities for that in a larger, more bureaucratic kind of situation that's not easy to achieve. But we have many meetings. We have beginning of the year meetings that lay out the year and tell parents exactly what will be covered and how they can be actively involved at school and at home. There are meetings that are topic related on growth and development. There are meetings on particular age groups. There are a lot of written communication going home from school, explaining what's going on, what the plans are, sending home samples of work. And for us, conferencing is, it was interesting to listen to Phyllis because, you know, certainly we do have a situation when there's a concern, a parent can initiate a conference and a teacher can initiate a conference, but we have conferences built in as just part of the way things are, so that it's just a means of communication. It's multiple times a year, and it's an opportunity that's set aside and formal and a way of parents and teachers talking, of the school sharing information and expectations that they feel are important, and for parents to share what's going on at home and ask questions if they don't understand. So that it's an open communication that's kind of ongoing.
It's nice it when sounds it happens very comfortable. That way. It doesn't happen that way everywhere, does it, Phyllis?
Absolutely.
There's so many times when parents don't respond when they're approached.
Yeah.
You mentioned that students bring home papers, bring their work home, supposedly. Now, parents are supposed to say, I'd like to see what you've been doing in English class. And the child says, I didn't get any papers back. I don't have anything to show you.
We don't do anything. We don't write. We don't read.
What did you do today? Nothing.
How can parents find ways to reinforce the educational process at home?
I think, first of all, they have to be role models themselves. They have to be readers. They have to read to their young children, be readers themselves. They need to have a place for their children to study and time set aside. Can't be running off all the time and always having the TV on and decent bedtimes and all of those basic things that we used to take for granted. Dinner hours would be nice, but it seems like nobody I know has a normal dinner hour in the suburbs anymore because somebody's off at a soccer game and someone's at a Girl Scout meeting or whatever. But I remember dinner hour was the time that we would talk in my home when I grew up about current events or books we had read or what we had done in school that day, and that was all very positive, reinforcing. We would come with good stories about school and neat stuff we had done and, again, talk about current events. More of that would be nice if people could find a time.
Good point.
I was going to say, I think it's over-scheduling that also is a problem in the family where kids have, you know, the book, The Hurried Child. I think it's such a hurried life that we all live. But funny thing happened at our school. We set up a discussion, like a morning breakfast sort of for parents to come in, and we'd all meet together and talk about, it was The Hurried Child. We were going to talk about actually our lives. And do you know that we didn't have one parent that showed? I mean, it was so indicative of our lives. And I mean, it was true. It was during the daytime, and I know a number of people work, and maybe part of that was it. But we just couldn't make the time for us to come together.
It's interesting. There was a study a number of years back, and I can't remember the details, except it was trying to figure out for the variables of what things were consistent with academic success. And they took children from all walks of life and all different kinds of kids, and there was one thing that was a common thing. There was only one thing academically successful, and it was they all had dinner with their families.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Isn't that astonishing?
We have just a few more minutes, and I guess we want to deal a little bit with behavior problems briefly, how parents should deal with a situation that comes up. Maybe, Joan, you'd like to start that?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, when there is a behavior problem that exists, that the parent tries to work with the child so the child takes it on as their responsibility and not the parent trying to resolve it. A parent can certainly get in touch with the school and help with strategies. There are a number of strategies that a parent could use and or a counselor could suggest to the child to use. You know, there's ignore. The child can just tell another child to stop. A child can talk to a teacher. A child can just remove themselves from the situation. Talking to a counselor, the counselor could call in both children if it was involving two children. The counselor could talk just to another child if the other child just could not handle that. The counselor, of course, if it escalated, could talk to an administrator or contact the other child's parent. In most cases, and of course there's no one rule to everything or one right answer, but in most cases for one parent to call another parent, I would say is not advisable. I think that when parents get involved, it only escalates the situation, misunderstandings. And really, the problem is between the two children. And certainly if the parent doesn't feel they're equipped to help their child with, you know, strategies, certainly a counselor and or even a teacher or someone that child feels close with, another adult in the building could help with that.
That's good. You give the child the ownership of the mm-hmm. problem. Marge, I think we're going to end with you and ask what the school most wants or expects from parents.
I think I'd just like to go back to your initial idea about partnership. I think what schools are feeling is important and wanting to achieve is really a partnership in learning, of, you know, having the adults in a child's life working together in a caring and meaningful way to be advocates for that person. And one of the highlights of my summer this summer was reading Mary Pfeiffer's new book, Shelter of Each Other, which I loved. And she just makes such a salient point of the fact that we live in a fragmented world, and the networks that used to be part of our lives when some of us were growing up are, for many families, not there anymore. Not an extended family, not a neighborhood that knows a child, not a community center that a child regularly goes to. And so schools play a very important role, I think, of being the other place in a child's life where that child spends a lot of time. And if the adults in the one arena can be in meaningful touch with the adults in the other, I think that everybody benefits. You know, parents feel more in touch, schools feel that they're better serving children and parents, and children feel cared for and well-known, which I think really makes a positive yeah. difference.
What a comforting thing that would be. That's very
Is
good.
There anything anybody wants to add to that?
I just want to emphasize what you said, I absolutely agree with you. That kind of communication is what the schools want from parents, and where we will find the most success if we're working together. And we had been talking before about discipline problems. Teachers in this area, and probably nationwide, I know been polled in this area, consider that the biggest concern they have. And parents, even though it's not child on child, sometimes just disruptive students in a classroom, parents find that very disconcerting because time is taken away from their child's education all the time. And sometimes I have talked to parents who have said to me, "He's your problem. I don't know what to do with him." But they really don't know what to do with
yes.
him. One mother told me she prays for me every day, but it was that was my problem, and that's how she was going to deal with it.
Oh.
So I've often thought we need to get together and have forums on this.
No.
But that it's that communication.
Yeah.
We need to work together. Can't emphasize that enough.
Right. On that
well,
note,
yes, we've enjoyed working together with the three of you. We'd like to thank Joan Bichot, Marge Diamond, and Phyllis Jaworski for their expertise as professionals and as parents. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad we could share parents' perspective.
If you would like to send suggestions, comments, or questions to Parents' Perspective, please email to parentspr@aol.com or contact us in care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.